So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 15. Hope you enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Watto. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host Danya.
Hi everyone.
And we have Eric returning.
Hey everybody.
And we have Gina back.
Hello.
Wow, a lot of co-hosts. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook. Send us an email through our website at resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. So, welcome back, everybody. How you all doing today?
No complaints.
Not everyone respond at once, right?
We're all so polite. We're just waiting for the other person to speak first.
I'm at the tail end of a cold, so I'm feeling better today than I was over the weekend. So that's always a good thing.
That is a good thing. You know, being sick. No, I'm a baby when I'm sick. Like I'm absolutely horrible. I'm like, I feel bad. But yeah, you know, I'm like the worst person. Like if I'm ever sick, I'm like, sympathize. Everyone, give me sympathy. I feel so. I'm like, I'm horrible when I'm sick. But I don't get sick very often, which is good. But yeah. Trust me, I feel your pain. I don't like being sick, so I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah. So on Friday, I had like a fever of 39 degrees, which is about. I think for you guys, it's
that's
low.
Ice. That's dead. That's,
that's like just above freezing.
You're not coming back from that, Danya. I don't know how to tell you.
It's like almost like 104, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. 104 is really high. Yeah.
Yes. So, and because I don't live with other, I live with other people in like a house share, but not, they were all in work and I was off sick from work. And I was like, I have no soup. No delivery places are open. That'll deliver. The one delivery place that was open, you had to have a minimum order of at least £15 to get something delivered.
That's a lot!
Yeah, and I was like, I'm not ordering all that food because I won't eat it all. So I was like texting my friend Jen being like, I really need soup and there's like nothing. She's like, oh, order an Uber and get the Uber driver to go pick stuff up for you. And I was like, yeah, Uber is like in London and Cardiff, and that's your lot. So I ended up going out with a really high fever to go and get soup. Stupidest thing. And I came back and watched Japanese dramas on Netflix. And one of them, hilariously, this is where this conversation is going to circle back around to Star Wars. Their ringtone was the Imperial March. So I kept thinking that was absolutely hilarious.
You know, you can tell she's sick because that story totally made sense in her head, but it took a while to get there. I love it, Danya. Sorry,
it's all right. She's getting her cold out of the way now because she's got a big trip coming up.
I know.
Speaking about that big trip, we have Indie PopCon coming up in, 2 weeks? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be pretty awesome. Indie PopCon takes place June 17th and 19th, and there is a panel. You guys can see us on June 17th, that Friday at 4 p.m., the Star Wars panel with Resistance Radio and the 501st, and that's going to be in the Wabash Ballroom. Is that right, Danya?
Yeah.
Wabash.
It's a Chicago term.
Wabash. Or what is the Chicago term for Wabash? What does it mean?
It's our street. We have streets named Wabash, and we also have a bridge, but it was someone's last name, and I should know.
See, you just totally, destroyed my dreams. So I'm like, I'm thinking it's going to be, Boom Shakalaka or Booyah or something like that.
All right,
I Googled. Booyah Ballroom.
Wait, no, I'm sorry, it is an Indiana word.
It is Indiana, yeah. It's a city in Noble Township, Wabash County, Indiana. I was like, I just Googled, who was Wabash? There was a battle. There was a battle of Wabash. It was a forgotten disaster of the Indian Wars. Major... You know, this is probably not going to be at all relevant to Star Wars, so...
It's not.
I would encourage you to... Oh, U.S. Army of the Early Republic. That sounds kind of Star Wars-y. The last part, the Republic. It's an Indian name.
I just want to say, Wabash!
Wabash!
Anyway... Okay, so obviously we have that panel. We'll have a booth set up for both us and Hypeable. Come take a look at it. Danya has a lot of really fun things planned for the booth. Danya, you want to speak about any of those?
Yeah, we've got loads of things that are going to be going on. So not only will we have loads of merch for sale, but we are going to have a little photo booth set up as well with some fun geeky props that you can come and take photos at, which should be a lot of fun and laugh. So much laughing.
I can't wait to see the props for the photo booth. Every photo booth I'm part of is always fun. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, we got to make them. We're making them right now. So that's going to be... It's some of the ones we've got planned are hilarious. So you're going to have to just come along to the booth to see what we've got to come and take photos with us.
Alrighty. Well, obviously, Indie PopCon coming up in 2 weeks. Come see us there. It'll be super awesome. But on to the news. We have quite a bit of news this week. What do you guys think about some of the news coming up?
First Big one, week for I know Star Wars it is, news, right? Yeah.
So, very first one is Rogue One reshoots are starting. They're underway right now. There's a source from the Hollywood Reporter says, it's to help match the tone of the original Star Wars, since Rogue One leads us up to just 10 minutes before the opening of A New Hope. So, if you guys go check out this article from Slash Film and the Hollywood Reporter, I will tell you this. It's really cool to kind of get a lot of little information about this without it being super spoilery. Mm. So just to give you an idea, a few things that were kind of told from this Hollywood Reporter. Essentially, they had a screening for Disney execs. No, not a general audience yet. And there was more the tone they were worried about. So I don't know, like, there's lots of news things that, oh, Rogue One reshoots, Hollywood, Disney execs are scrambling because they don't like the movie or something. I think it's just to match the tone. Because definitely if you look at the trailer for it, it's definitely a little bit darker. And everything we heard coming out of it, Darth Vader just being this super bad guy, makes it seem a lot darker than the original trilogy. Actually, any of the films in the franchise, right? So it sounds like they just want to get it to be that space opera, that Saturday morning serial that Star Wars was known for. Because literally, it takes place 10 minutes before we see Princess Leia on the tentative for flying over Tatooine. So that's kind of cool. What do you guys think about this news?
It's very interesting. The fact that it... Because we knew that it was going to lead into A New Hope, but I didn't think that we ever realized that it would come that close. Like, just ten minutes before the opening of A New Hope.
Right, the crew of that blockade runner are all on the blockade runners when the movie ends. Like, you know, the opening of A New Hope, nothing changed 10 minutes prior to Leia and R2.
Well, you're going to literally see Leia on the blockade runner with the crew, and they're going to receive the transmission, or they're going to do, you know, we have no clue what's going to happen, but it's going to be something where they're waiting for this transmission, or they're waiting for the plans to be delivered to them, which we know leads to the fateful events of R2 and Tatooine and Luke and all the story.
I mean, I was on Twitter yesterday. This news broke. I saw there were people really trying to quell fires because there was a lot of panic, I think it's safe to say, in the air, like, oh my gosh, this movie's going to be terrible. Everybody talks about how expensive these reshoots are going to be. The first report was all about how it was going to be so expensive and that this movie is not satisfying. It's not testing well to audiences. And apparently there's a lot of, like, conflicting, you know, reports. For instance, this one on Slash Film, or the summary on Slash Film says that the screening was just for Disney execs, who thought that the tone was off. So it's not necessarily that there's, you know, audiences en masse who are being disappointed in this latest Star Wars outing. It's just the Disney execs thought there was something a little off. And, you know, to that point, I also don't think that it's necessarily needs to be as fun or as lighthearted. You know, like, on one point, in one way, this quote from Slash Film says, the reshoots will attempt to lighten the mood, bring some levity into the story, and restore a sense of fun to the adventure. Now I'm thinking, wait a minute, there wasn't fun in this adventure? Like, is it an unfun movie as it stands? And the thing is, I don't think this movie needs to be, like, the biggest crowd pleaser. Traditionally, Star Wars movies are that way, but I almost would prefer a niche Star Wars film that doesn't appeal to the lowest common denominator. Like, everybody at all times in every place. Do you guys agree?
I agree. And it's really interesting because basically, reportedly, the tone of the film was more like a traditional war drama. So I'm thinking maybe like a Saving Private Ryan or something like that, where
it's which is kinda, a great movie.
Which I get it. It's a great film. But when you look at, this is the first anthology film. It's the first non, you know, saga film, if you will. And as it is, you know, they've already talked about how J.J. Abrams did what he did with Episode 7, you know, The Force Awakens, to kind of combat some of the negative thoughts and negative processes around the prequel films, you know, the last Star Wars films we got. So this film definitely has to be very good. And I don't think it's probably not good, but they said it was too much like a traditional war drama. And so the reshoots will attempt to lighten that mood and bring it kind of in line, I think, with the original film. Because again, you have to remember, the Star Wars films are about war. It's civil war, the galactic civil war between the Rebellion and the Empire. And obviously the Empire, you have to remember, they do some pretty heinous things. They destroy an entire planet in the first film. So it's obviously serious and dark, but it's not portrayed like that. You know what I mean from there? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just meant to kind of maybe lighten some of the mood, maybe a joke here or there to kind of break it up and still be that kind of fun, exciting film.
But I find it hard to believe it wouldn't have had those moments as is, you know? I mean, I think everybody understands the role that comedy plays in lightening the mood, like everybody who would make the film in the first place. Like, I hope that these reshoots aren't going to sort of cut the legs off of this. Like, just because this is the first anthology, this can't be different in any way from the other Star Wars films. It has to be, you know, 56.8% funny and, you know, 38%, you know, enjoyable all times, you know.
Is that how you make a Star Wars movie? You just like
it's a formula. Things. You know, I want these films to diverge a little bit. I mean, JJ did an absolute amazing job bringing the worlds together and ushering in an entire new generation of heroes while at the same time paying off storylines from the past. But I also don't need another movie to do that. Like, this was going to be completely different. None of these characters that, so far as we know, exist in the universe already, except maybe Darth Vader. You know, this could have been something that was entirely its own, and I kind of really wanted that out of it. And it's still going to be that way, except I kind of didn't want it to feel so much like every other Star Wars film. That was what I was most attracted to.
I don't think it will. I think it's still going to have its war film tones to it. But again, until we see more trailers and more from it, we won't know. But there are also rumblings that the reshoots might involve bringing in a quick appearance of a young Han Solo, which would tie this film more to, you know, the original film. Because think about it. If it's going to take place somewhere around Tatooine, how cool would it be, even not to see him, but to see like the Millennium Falcon flying down to Tatooine,
because that's where they meet him? That would be okay. That I'd be okay with. I don't think this film needs Han Solo in it, but seeing the Millennium Falcon like flying past in the background or something like that, okay. That's okay. But otherwise it's kind of like they're clinging on too much to like the familiar characters. Yeah. And like Eric was saying, this is supposed to be a spin-off, an anthology movie. It's supposed to stand apart from, but still within the same universe as the Star Wars movies that we know. And I don't necessarily hate the idea of it going like a war film kind of feel to it, because one thing I've always like really wanted to see them dig into more is the fact that this is a war. It has some really huge and dark implications of the fact of what's happening. And obviously, knowing what the Death Star is capable of, that would kind of put a really awful spin on things in the war as well. But, you know, I don't want Han Solo in this movie. I'm sorry. Like,
me neither.
If they're gonna have to add him just for, like, the sake of, hey, we're gonna have a Han Solo spinoff, just pull a Marvel and put him at the end of the credits. Yeah. Like, but no, I very much agree. I hope that they aren't editing just for Han Solo. I do hope they're editing I mean, not the main reason, but I hope they're if they're going to edit, they do add some lighthearted moments. But
yeah,
I mean, I feel like reshoots in general happen way more.
Yeah, reshoots are just part of it. It's built into every production schedule. It's I've worked on feature films in post production. I've worked on television shows. Reshoots are very common. A good example is as you're cutting a scene. You know, there's examples of things where we flip video so that way the direction of their looking or moving goes in it. In fact, we even see this in The Force Awakens, where the scene of Kylo Ren putting his mask down, that on that
ash, crazy.
That shot is actually flipped because the markings are on the wrong side. But we do that because it looks better facing the direction it is. Now, obviously, that's a simple thing. It's not on screen for a long time. It doesn't linger. But reshoots, because at the time, you know, you think you're trying to have your focal line to one direction, and you have to reshoot the entire scene because it doesn't work the way editing goes. So reshoots really are built into every single film. The extent of reshoots, that's where it gets into, you know, discussion. Like, is it reshooting where they're redoing the entire film? The fact that they're not saying that they're changing the release date tells me this is probably just standard reshoots based on how the film came together. Well,
they already did that. To be fair, they already did change the release date. It should be out now.
I think that's originally true. Well, right? But they also, I think they did that also because of The Force Awakens. When they pushed The Force Awakens back, I felt like they kind of pushed this one back because of that.
Well, right. And that was the reason they said at the time, I remember talking about it on this show, too, that it made sense and it was great. But I also am kind of like borderline conspiracy theorist here. And I love the idea that like they kind of knew that this film wasn't necessarily going to fly. Because like the other thing is they had a lot of opportunities, Disney and everyone making this film, to catch some of the issues they were going to have with it before filming wrapped. You know, if they didn't like the script, if they didn't think there were enough one-liners,
I'm trying to remember who it was, but they brought someone else to be a script doctor and kind of rework some of the script, probably the dialogue most likely. So, you know, I think they did catch it on, and, you know, as long as the direction and the acting doesn't come across kind of like, Grandpa George's, where it's like one take and we're done, and that's why they're like, we need to go back and fix some of it. You know, definitely think it's going to be good. I'm still holding hope out, and honestly, for a film that's going to be super gritty, like, just look at that trailer. It's super gritty. It's a war film. And the best part is, we have no clue what's going to happen. Like, with Force Awakens, you know, I kind of watched the film, and I'm like, I knew where it was going to go based on this. I'm like, okay, this is what's going to happen. Obviously, it took a lot of cues from the original trilogy, but like, I was able to not to say what it was, you know, what was going to happen, but I kind of knew where it was going to go.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because I didn't, but with this one, we know that the Rebels are going to get the plans to the Death Star, right? Like,
well, you almost know
what's going to happen.
But you don't know how it's going to get there, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know the route. Like, same thing with, like, Force Awakens. Like, I didn't know what the end thing was going to be, but I knew what was going to happen as I watched it. Like, I saw it unfold, and it just was like a natural unfolding.
Whereas you're talking about how predictable it is.
Yeah, the predictability of The Force Awakens. Whereas, like, this, obviously we know it's going to happen at the end. But how are they going to get there? What's going to happen? We know that the plans are going to end up with Princess Leia on the Tentative Four. Like, that's what we know.
But everything who's else? Who's going to get the plans to her?
Who's going to live?
How many of them are going to come out alive?
It's going to be Han Solo.
Who's going to live? Who's going to die? Who's going to...
It's going to be mysteriously 15 years younger Han Solo, taking you up to about 10 minutes before A New Hope happens, is going to bring the plans to the Blockade Runner.
And that's when she... You know, yeah.
But I also want to say, like, before we move on, that what I don't want to happen is for this to be like a precedent. Like, I don't want the film. I want the film to exist the way that its makers intended. Like, if this is the grittiest Star Wars they ever make, fine. But let it be, you know. But also, because I'm expecting Episode 8 from writer and director Rian Johnson to be much more character-based and character-driven than any other Star Wars film. Star Wars is this breakneck action adventure thriller, lots of explosions, lots of fast-paced scenes, and fun, typically. But Rian Johnson is amazing at writing characters that feel real and have real emotions and have a lot of weight with each other, and I wouldn't want him or any other director anywhere to change what it is that they do best in favor of crowd-pleasing. I want a more character-focused... Okay.
I don't think it's crowd-pleasing. You know, I don't think it's studio-pleasing.
Like, in all honesty, I don't think that's going to happen, just because we know Rian Johnson added to Bloodlines, you know, the novel. We talked about it two episodes ago. And that book has... It's all about character development, to understand the mindset of these characters, to see how, you know, the First Order evolves. And the fact that it was told that he had his thoughts told to Claudia Gray about how the First Order is and kind of why they exist and where they came from... You can see it in the book that the next film is going to be The Empire Strikes Back of the saga. It's going to be very character, very strong in the way the relation between the characters and just the universe itself. So I'm excited to see it. So I'm not worried about that one at all. We're looking at Rogue One and Rogue One alone on this one.
Okay, but speaking of Disney, right, look at Joss Whedon and how disenchanted he's become with Disney and with the making of Ultron, for instance. The scene with Thor in the cave is famous for being a big WTF moment, but it was something that the studio demanded. They interfered in his work and ultimately made something that didn't make any sense to anybody but them, if it did to them. And, you know, an overbearing studio is and could mean death and should be treated as such in such a way by filmmakers and audiences, because to be honest, the studios are not the fans. They are not the consumer here, and they're not.
I trust Kathleen Kennedy, so
I'll actually second that. I mean, on the Marvel side with Age of Ultron, that was still being controlled by Marvel Entertainment as a whole, with Ike Perlmutter as the head, and so he's notorious for being difficult. Then obviously they've now split off, and Kevin Feige is now in charge and answers to just Disney, and has nothing to do with that part of Marvel. So they've split the films off. So from, I think it was, they started getting into issues with Civil War, but there's a whole politics thing in the background there that possibly was spurred on by a lot of what happened with Age of Ultron as well. But as far as Star Wars goes, Kathleen Kennedy, I trust her wholeheartedly.
Well, and I think you have to remember also, Star Wars is not just for the studios. Star Wars is for the fans. They do things like the Fan Film Awards. They do things like at Celebration, there's, you know, we're not going to talk about it on this episode because we talked about it last year, or last episode, but not last year, last episode. they talk about, you know, the podcast tables, you know, the podcast section that they're doing. So, Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm know what the fans want. Obviously, there are, you know, it's a business still, it's for profit, and they're going to have finagle around that, but I'm not worried about Episode 8, and I think this one, again, reshoots, I think we may be digging too deep into it, they are underway, which is cool, that, you know, they're kind of in that last stage, because reshoots are one of the last things you do before you kind of get what they call a film lock, and when film lock is done, all the effects get finished, all the music goes in, the scoring goes in there, any voiceover or any redubs for audio go in, that's when they start to finish the film, it's once they get film lock, so reshoots is at the very end of it, and we're about, 200 days away from Rogue One, so it's about the right time for it. I just want another trailer.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Just the first trailer was so good, honestly, and I want that movie. I want as close to that movie as we can possibly get.
well, we'll get it. And speaking of wanting that movie, we now know where Kylo Ren got his Darth Vader mask. Prop Shop and Lucasfilm have launched the Ultimate Studio Edition of Prop Collectibles. So if you guys head to StarWars.com and take a look at some of their Galactic Blacksmith, the story of the Prop Shop, basically just to give you guys a background on this real quick is Prop Shop is a company who works with movie studios all the time. They make props for films, and they actually worked on some of the props for the Star Wars The Force Awakens. Well, unlike other companies who make movie replicas as what they do, Lucasfilm and Prop Shop have partnered together to actually sell movie props that they recreate. You know, these are the ultimate in quality. There's a really cool video of them doing laser 3D modeling scanning of what they've done from the set. So like the actual mask that was used from the set, if it picked up an extra scratch from, you know, the kitty litter that Kylo Ren put, you know, his mask in, it's going to be on this, you know, movie prop replica, this ultimate one. So they use 3D printing, hand painting, chip insertion. It's pretty cool. So you'll be literally be able to own probably one of my favorite things that they're offering is Chewie's bowcaster. But obviously you can get the mangled Darth Vader mask, Poe's helmet, Finn's helmet with the blood, and obviously Kylo Ren's mask. So what do you guys think about this? I know Donnie and I got to look at it before.
I wonder whose blood it is on the when you get the helmet, when you get Finn's helmet.
It's paint. It's paint. You know that, all right? It's not. You gotta understand. And blood is unsanitary. It's not gonna be real blood.
No, but. Look. I'm looking at the images, and there's mirrored handprint on that. Like, that's intense.
Yeah, man. It's pretty cool stuff.
The first thing that popped into my head when I saw the Darth Vader helmet, other than this is where Kylo Ren got it, was do you think that the reason he has all of his tantrums is because he didn't get the first one?
my collectible is number 22.
That's it. That's exactly
yeah, there's
it.
A little serial number etched into the bottom of it. Unbelievable.
I kind of want the even though I don't love it, I kind of want the Kylo Ren saber just to examine it. Like I'm this thing still perplexed me, and I want to understand it more, but I also really want that Rey staff.
I want either the Rey staff or the lightsaber.
I will say Ren's lightsaber. I got to see a model of it at Disneyland when I was just there, you know, a couple months ago when they had their Power of the Force or whatever it is at Disneyland, but they have one on display, and it's interesting. Like, it definitely looks, Kylo Ren's saber looks definitely kind of hobbled together, if you will. It's unstable, it's not quite complete and finished. So it was a really cool design. So yeah, I agree, like all the weapons look awesome, but I will say bowcaster, just because, you know, Chewie had it and Han Solo likes it too. It's a bowcaster.
There you go. There it is. I was waiting for
it. Anyway. All right. So obviously great pop stuff. Take a look at it on StarWars.com. Also, the Han Solo spinoff film, Lawrence Kasdan talked about it. It will be starting to film in early 2017. So I know that seems like a bit away from right now, but guess what? We have 200 days away from Rogue One. That means we're probably like, what, 225 days from probably this film starting to go. So that's kind of cool to have another film in the works. So that's kind of nice. What do you guys think about this?
I mean, it's exciting that they're going to be filming another movie. I'm still on the fence about how much a Han Solo spin-off movie is needed. Like, I like some of the ideas that we, like, threw around for what it could be about.
It's gonna have Lando. Hello there. You know, it's gonna be, come on, like, I would love the story of the Falcon, you know. We'll see what it comes out to be. I'm excited for it regardless. It's Star Wars.
Yeah, I just, again, some of my trepidation about this is the fact that if you don't leave enough to the imagination, then it takes some of the mystery out of it as well, and the speculation. And sometimes that's the most fun to have with other fans. And Han Solo is a character who has had so much time dedicated to him already that I don't know how necessary this is. But again, I'd like to wait until we get a little bit more information. There could be some interesting things that they do with this. And I guess knowing that it's early 2017 that it's going to start filming means that we'll probably start getting a little bit more information and then get a better handle on what exactly this film is going to be about.
Okay, I'll take that. All right, cue the Death Star alarm. We have a little bit of a spoiler coming up, so you can skip about 5 minutes ahead. I don't expect us to talk too much about this, but we have more news about Tom Hardy being in episode 8. I know, right? Tom Hardy will be supposedly in episode 8, not as Boba Fett, but as a stormtrooper similar to what Daniel Craig was. Basically, the concept is when Danya said she doesn't believe it when she says that he's supposed to slap Finn's ass, it sounds like it's actually going to be what's happening. And it kind of makes sense a little bit. So the concept is, at least what has been told from this rumor that's out, is Tom Hardy's going to be playing a First Order Stormtrooper, and he glimpses Finn, FN-2187, on a secret mission, but doesn't realize it, and he thinks that FN-2187 is incognito, and he gets slapped by this unknown Stormtrooper in the ass, and it says congratulations on being promoted to a Resistance Infiltrator and Spy because they were old friends from the First Order Academy days. So, like, I guess it makes sense. Like, if they're old pals and friends, and he doesn't realize.
But the one thing that I'm still stuck on with this is, one, we know that Finn was a bit of an outsider. Like, he was never given a nickname in the First Order. That's something that's canon, because we know that because he gives his designation to Poe. So, absolutely, hands down, like, that's that. He did not have a nickname like
nobody liked him.
Other, basically, because he was, I don't know, because Phasma had him kind of picked out to be like on track for being an officer. So we know that people basically kept him at a distance. So the fact that maybe this is going to be a friend from his Stormtrooper days is making me go, really? But that goes against stuff that we already know. And also, would a Stormtrooper be, would they be that friendly?
Well, remember, we talked about this when we talked about Slips and the other Stormtroopers, when we talked about before the Awakening. You know, obviously Finn made friends within his squad, if you will. You know, TR-8R, you know, traitor, because they realized like they broke him. They made friends. Like, he took care of Slips, and it was probably because he was friends with these guys, cared about them like surviving, that when his friend died and touches him on the face and everything with the bloody streaks and everything, that's kind of what made him say, this is not right.
I don't doubt that Finn had those feelings. Right. I have no doubt that Finn felt really strongly and really emotionally about the other people in his squad and the other people he was training with. Do I think it was reciprocated? Absolutely not.
Well, no, okay, that's the point.
These are people who, they cannot they don't value human life or alien life. Like, they're going around killing people. Like, it's almost, this is the problem that you get when you try and humanize Stormtroopers, like, any one of them, is, like, where does it stop? You know, do we need a Stormtrooper standalone movie to really, although I feel like that was it should have been Attack of the Clones, but it wasn't. Like, where we, you know, figure out what it is behind that. Like, I'm just with Danya on this. I don't think that they would be that.
I don't know. Because, like, you got to remember, these guys grew up and trained together for years. Like, I get that they probably don't have the same type
trained
of
to
respect.
Kill.
Yeah, all right. So, like, have you ever been on a baseball team or a football team or any type of team where you build that camaraderie? Because, like, here's the thing is, like, they slap them on the ass. And, like, I've never understood this in sports. Like, I played sports in high school, but, like, the whole slap in my ass thing, I didn't get it. Like,
no.
I know. But, like, it's, like, good game, and that's, like, what happens, right? Like, in the locker room. So, I can see this totally being, like, hey, you know, they talk about the locker room, say, whose gun is bigger than whose? Like, I can, you know, disassemble my blaster faster than yours.
Blaster, not gun.
You know, like, but that's my whole point. Like, I can totally see this being, like, a little nod to, like, that camaraderie that built up there from their First Order Academy days. But it's interesting that it would be more along the lines of him congratulating him on his promotion to Resistance Infiltrator and Spy, because you would think that everyone would know that he's a traitor, but it sounds like, you know, again, this is pure speculation from even the article, that Snoke and General Hux and Kylo Ren didn't want to let the rest of the First Order know that one of the Stormtroopers who have never done something like this defected. You know, they would try to keep it quiet. You know what I mean?
They hush it up. That makes a lot of sense.
And so, like, so it makes sense for him to be like, hey, good job. Keep going. Go about your business. You know, move along, like, type of thing. Like, just move along. Like, it's, and he's just, and, you know, Finn's just like, oh my God, I thought I was dead there. You know, like, he realized, thought he was going to be uncovered or something. But yeah. So yeah, it's definitely, I mean, something kind of cool.
I get that bit. That bit, fine. The bit where it's like talking about his promotion or supposed promotion and recognizing him and so on, like, that bit definitely makes sense. But it's the closeness, the camaraderie bit, the,
it's like, bro, what's up, man? Bro, yeah, let's kill some resistant fighters.
He might just be trying to hitch his wagon to Finn's.
I don't know, or maybe Finn likes that stuff, you know? Who knows?
Maybe.
You know, we see there's the whole Finn Poe thing, so maybe we are learning more about Finn at this point. Who knows? Anyway, that is our spoiler rumor. Take it as you will. It may not even happen, but maybe. I can see it happening. Anyway, we have more news about Daisy Ridley opening up about the death of Han Solo, which is interesting to see an actor talk about the death of a character. Did you guys get a chance to read what she said?
No.
Okay. So she talks about, like, when you watch something, you feel removed from it. So, like, you're obviously watching this film, and you're able to be removed from it. But obviously, the death of Han Solo is very big and emotional reaction for a lot of people. And she said, it's awful that people die every day, but if you experience the grief in a dark place, you're able to actually feel it. So she feels like the death of Han Solo was able to help a lot of people through their own possible grief and stuff like that. And it was obviously a very emotional thing because, you know, people love Star Wars. Like, people just are completely enamored with it. You know, I think she knew she was going to become a big actress from this, but I think she's kind of started to dawn on her, like, how big it's become. So she does react to the death of Han Solo and talks about how it was just a very, very emotional reaction. Seeing newspapers and people, you know, talk about how it's helped them throughout different things. What do you guys think about that?
I definitely agree. I think a lot of us especially know that from Potter, that deaths in literature, cinema, pop culture can really help you better understand or come to terms with something that could be happening in your life or has already happened. But I think especially with Han Solo, he's been an iconic character through generations, that it probably opened dialogue for a lot of people.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. You know, I know I watched Star Wars growing up with my parents, and when Han Solo died, my dad kind of talked to me. He's like, you know, I have a living will. I'm like talking.
Oh
about
my God!
I'm like, wow, Dad, I'm not going to kill you. I love you. I'm not Ben Solo. But like, it literally brought out like a conversation around death.
That is amazing.
So it, it's not that I haven't talked about, you know, stuff like that, you know, finances and just life with my dad and stuff like that. But it was one of those things, like, you know, I took my dad and my mom to go see it at the Grauman's Chinese Theater, you know, the big theater to see it in that the premiere was at and everything. And they had already seen it once, and this was like my fourth time seeing it. But after seeing it again, like, my dad even just like reflected, he's like, I don't know why they had to kill Han Solo. Like, and my dad's not a big Star Wars fan, but then like it brought about that whole like, you know, conversation and thinking. And, you know, I have grandparents who are, unfortunately, I just had a grandmother pass away, but it's just one of those things where like it allows people to have that conversation. Cause you know, you mentioned, Gina, about like Harry Potter and stuff like that. It allows people to kind of see that it happens everywhere and not just, you know, to them. And that it's not the most horrible thing happened. It's just life. And things go on. So I definitely think it was interesting to have her kind of reflect on that and talk about it. So
exactly what Daisy.
My mother still won't acknowledge the death of Han Solo. She's like, I don't really want to rewatch that movie. He didn't die. I'm not. He didn't. That's not how it ended. I'm like, okay, Mom. All right. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like that. I like that she opened up and talked about it. And then the last bit of news before we move on to our spotlight topic, we have John Boyega and Daisy Ridley recreate the Star Wars auditions, not just their Star Wars auditions, in a surprise SNL extra. EW, Entertainment Weekly, posted this just a couple hours ago, actually. What do you guys think about this video? It's pretty funny seeing them making fun of different actors and actresses. My favorite had to be the Black Eyed Peas pretending to be, or wasn't really the Black Eyed Peas, but pretending to be the Cantina Band. What do you guys think about this video?
I don't know about Matthew McConaughey's Lando voice. I kind of still want Billy Dee to.
I want Billy Dee, but you know, once I saw Lando, like, come on, Lando, obviously he didn't get it because, you know. Lando wasn't in episode 7, but you know, I'm not to say that he would have gotten an overability. But it's definitely worth a watch. You know, it's about a 2-minute video. It's really funny, just kind of watching them kind of poke fun at their own audition tapes, if you will. And then I do like John Boyega going on a rant about TK421. You know, why aren't you at your post? And then he gets a little bit a little urban on him. A little urban.
You was gonna be a legit stormtrooper, he says.
He's like, you gotta go straight to be a stormtrooper. Anyway, so I liked it. What do you guys think about it all the way through? Danya, any thoughts on it? Or were you not able to watch it? Okay, I want to make sure you can watch it across the pond. You know, sometimes I know legal things.
Yeah, I know. It's a pain in the ass, basically, trying to get to watch things. But no, I thought it was funny. I just love stuff like this anyway, where they just do a little riff on actual like audition tapes and recreate things or do like impressions of like other actors and stuff. It's just delightful. And I love seeing anything with Daisy and John, and I'm just like 200% there all the time. I've fallen in love with them so quickly. It's a problem.
No, so check it out if you get a chance. It'll be on our post on our website, and we'll probably tweet at it and Facebook link it at some point if you didn't get a chance to look at it. But everyone ready to move on to our spotlight topic?
Heavens yes,
because he's a Toydarian. We're gonna be talking about Watto. You know, so you know, and when you just suggested this, Eric, I was kind of like, "All right, we'll do Watto." Like, I was like, I jumped right at it. I'm like, "That's cool.
Way to sell me under the throw me under the bridge." It's like, guys, if you don't like this discussion on Watto, if you think there's so many other more interesting characters we can talk about in the Star Wars universe, Eric, I loved your suggestion. Thank you so much for suggesting we talk about Watto.
Well, no, like I, as soon as you said it, I was like, "Oh man, I want that!" Like, I wanted to talk about it.
Here was my recommendation for talking about Watto. Question: have we talked about Watto? That was my suggestion. Okay, all right. I'm just clearing my name here.
I was all like, let's do it. So you know, here's the thing: is Watto is an interesting character. We only see him in 2 films. We see him in Episode 1, and Episode 2.
Right.
And I love talking about the prequels because there's a lot of great things about the prequels, but it's overshadowed by a lot of other things. Like, don't get me wrong, like, it's rough watching some of the prequels, at least some of the scenes from the prequels, at least, not all of it, but just some of the scenes from the prequels. Like, I really do enjoy them. I don't care what people say. Maybe I grew up, I was at that age, I was in 8th grade when Episode 1 came out, but I do remember, like, watching the films. And Watto is an interesting character. You know, just to give you an idea, he's a slaver, which, being young as a kid and like being introduced to a character who is a slave trader, like who's a, you know, a human trafficker, like I'm like, that they put him in such a good light for being such a bad type of character.
I guess
you guys agree. Like, I don't know.
I agree.
So, and here's the thing is, so he all right, to give you an idea, if you don't know who Watto is, this is from Episode 1 and 2. He is a junk dealer, and he is the owner of Shmi Skywalker and Anakin Skywalker, who later becomes Darth Vader. So thinking about this, like, he kind of is a father figure almost to young Anakin at this time and age. Like, think about that. Like, he won Anakin and Shmi from Gardula the Hutt in a bet. So he literally is a slave. You know, he owns 2 slaves, and he won them from gambling. And he's this father figure for Anakin. As soon as I rewatch Episode 1 for this, and like, as soon as I saw it, like when he let Anakin go home early, and you see Jake Lloyd go, yippee! I'm like, okay, like, you know, he has, like, he cares about this kid. even though it's his owner. And he's this just different type of character. So what do you guys think about him as this father figure for Anakin at this time?
To answer that question, yeah. I think we need to look at the scene between Watto and Qui-Gon where he loses Anakin, where essentially Qui-Gon cheats by causing the dice because
he's a shady Jedi.
Because Watto, I know that was just like that made me want to talk more about Qui-Gon because of the fact that I remember that he cheated. But essentially, you know, Watto, I feel my personal opinion is that Watto only cares about Anakin so far as he can get profit off of him. The thing is, you know, I mean, he essentially gave Anakin a pod to race because there might have been something in it for him, you know, and
But he also bet against Anakin multiple times. Like, in, you know, when he mentions that, you know, before Qui-Gon and Watto enter into that, you know, deal, that gambling deal, you know, it's one of those things where he kind of mentions, like, I don't have a racer. That he banged up the last one in the last race. And actually, if you read the novelization of Phantom Menace, you actually see that first pawn race where Sebulba actually flashes his fence at him. So it's one of those things where I agree to an extent on that. But it is one of the things, like, he bet against him. Like, he let him, he realized he had the skill, and, you know, he's kind of letting him grow. He's like, it's like, I feel like him giving a pod is kind of like dad giving someone a bike, you know, a kid a bike. It's like, hey, have fun with it. You know, like,
I just don't see this at all. I'm sorry.
I don't either.
I like to play devil's advocate here in the conversation. Otherwise, like there's no conversation.
I really love the, because I never thought of it before, the fact that he probably was a father figure to him. And I, even, like, first time around watching it, like, I knew, like, yeah, he's a slaver, he owns this kid, but he had a sense of compassion and understood that, yes, this is a child whom he works for me, he makes me good money, he wins races for me, but he understood at the end of the day that this is a kid who just at some points just wants to go out and play. Like, I'm sure Anakin spent there were plenty of times where Anakin was just like, can I please go and play with my friends? Like, everything's clean or all the things are sold or no one's coming. Can I just go out? And Watto, for being the crook that he probably is, still had a small piece of heart and compassion, knowing this
he worked that kid to the bone. There's like no Gina's other way to look at it.
See, I feel like Gina's writing some fan fiction right now about Watto, you know, being a compassionate father figure. Can I go play with my friends, Watto, please?
Sure, son.
I don't think every time he was like, yeah, hit the bricks, but I think there were pieces of him that understood, and maybe it was just, hey, to keep this kid happy and keep him making money for me, I gotta appease him a couple times. Which is that he had
work to do, and Anakin, being so talented, would actually get the work done.
That's true.
I think there were just limits, and you know, when Anakin did find that he could go out and play, it was because he had done all the work that Watto made him do and could think of. This whole Watto as a father figure idea is very interesting. I think it's great to think about. I love thinking about it. But I think that, me personally, I feel that if he were a father figure, it was sort of a reluctant one or a happenstance one, because there was no dad for Anakin. You know, there was no, and that's obviously another conversation. Shmi, her story to Qui-Gon about how he was conceived or the origin of Anakin and who his dad was, if it wasn't the Force itself, which it might have been. But Watto is just his owner. Watto is, you know, I feel like the closest that it would have come to be like father-son is Anakin would have assisted Watto in ripping off Travelers.
And, I would agree with you.
You know, he kind of, Anakin's smart enough to realize what's going on there. Like, Watto being so into gambling as he is, and so into, sort of unfair practices. You know, it would have become very clear very soon that Watto was ripping people off, maybe not giving the best value, the best deal, but Anakin's job, his entire life, depended on him going along with it. And I think, you know, he would have valued the boy if the boy could maybe convince a customer who wasn't sure to buy something, or, you know, to kind of... I feel like I can see Watto using Anakin's youth to help him make sales, but the bottom line is, I just see dollar signs in Watto's eyes.
You see Watto using puppy dog eyes to help make a sale or something like that.
No, using Anakin's puppy dog eyes.
Anakin's puppy dog eyes.
Anakin makes the puppy dog's eyes. I don't think that was Anakin's strategy when making sales. I think he was more, I'll freak them out with my knowledge. Then, you know,
so here's the thing. I'm gonna jump ahead in our notes here, guys, real quick. Just I want to bring this back to the father figure. So we see Watto a second time in Attack of the Clones, and I literally just rewatched this. And when Anakin returns and asks him what's he doing, and then he asks him where Shmi Skywalker is, Watto kind of lights up. It took him a while to realize it was
Little Annie.
You sure sprouted. You know, he like gets really excited, and his arms even go up to like thinking he might get a hug from Anakin. Like at first he's already kind of defense, like no problem, no Jedi. Like, he doesn't realize that it's Anakin, but when he asks about Shmi Skywalker, he kind of like gets really excited. He starts flapping his wings again because you kind of see him sitting on this like stool, and his arms go out to give him a hug, and then he even says like, "Oh, maybe you can help me with some deadbeat who owe me lots of money." You know, like,
right. That's the thing. He's using him again. He realizes.
But it's like coming back to an old friend. He's like, "Hey, little no. Annie, you grew really big." No.
Watto is a broken man, and this is why I like, of all of Attack of the Clones' failings, I love the return of Watto, because you get this comprehension, and this he lights up, as you said, Mikey. But it just has to do with the fact, like, Watto didn't recognize it at the time, but man, owning those two slaves before he lost them in that gamble, before he lost his little Annie, his moneymaker, he was actually pretty happy back then. But it all comes down to, he's a broken man because of his gambling, because of his bad practices, because he was never a good man. And so it's, or Tordarian, male Tordarian. You know, he was never anything that passing as a decent person, and that's why he's broken now. It's not because he lost his son, who he's missed and mourned over every year of the 10 years
little
that it's
Annie,
been.
It is you!
No, he just wants his moneymaker back. He wants, and that's why the conversation goes straight to money again. It's all about making the debts, right? Like, Watto hasn't really changed all that much, and I think just showing the conviction with which he gambles with Qui-Gon is everything you need to know about the character. But that's just my own personal take.
You know, it's really interesting. Like, the reason why I kind of am trying to be this devil's advocate is because when you watch Attack of the Clones, the realization that it's little Annie that he gets excited is not when he asks about Shmi Skywalker. It's actually, as he's asking about Shmi Skywalker, he's picked up the pit droid, and Anakin is actually putting it back together. You know, Watto is on that thing, struggling to put it back together, and as soon as he puts it back together and places it back down, it dawns on him. He's asking about Shmi Skywalker. He looks at the droid is now fixed, and he goes, "Oh my gosh, you are Annie who fixed everything for me." I agree. You know, he is using Anakin, you know, as a young child to kind of fix the droids around there. He's a great tinkerer. We know he's good at this because he built his own pod racer. We know Anakin
built his own protocol droid.
I know he built C-3PO. So yeah, I agree he's using him, but I feel like there is some type of, you know, relationship there. Even if it's not just like master and owner, there is a sense of recognition, especially in Attack of the Clones, of like him getting excited to see someone who he thought he'd never see again.
He owns the kid's mom too, and what happened to her? He sold her. I mean,
he says selling Shmi is business. Business is business. You know, he kind of poo-poos it off, and it's like, hey, it's done. So, you know, it's interesting just seeing him as this type of authority figure, even maybe not father figure. But back to Watto as a Tordarian, mind tricks don't work on them. You know, it doesn't work on him.
What? Now, you're waving your hand around, you think of some Jedi or something? I love it.
There's going to be so many voice bites that we can pull from this episode. But yeah, so what do you guys think about this? Like, is it that Jedi mind tricks don't work on him and the rest of the Toydarians because they all kind of act that way? You know, we've only seen a handful of Toydarians, like in the Clone Wars, where they're all kind of almost the same type of character. Obviously, they're a little bit different.
I don't like to hear that at all, that they're similar, because Watto himself is sort of an offensive stereotype of Jewish people, right? Isn't it?
I guess, maybe. I don't know if I would say that, but I would say, like, you know, he's in it for himself, and he's kind of, you know, kind of a scummy guy. But do you guys think it's like they can't be influenced because they're so single-tracked mind, or is that there's something different about them as a species that they're, you know, they're not able to do? Because again, we know that Jedi mind tricks don't really work on Jabba the Hutt or those type of things because the strong-willed can't be influenced by it. What do you guys think is causing it?
I like the idea.
It's a species thing. That's what I always thought, but. I like the idea
that it's a species thing, that like the Force, like maybe even in like the most scientific terms possible, these characters have grown somehow immune or just disconnected from the Force. Like they're less affected by it genetically for reasons, whether it's an immunity to, or like, you know, so their free will has asserted itself or something like that. Or they're just less. Like, you also don't see Toydarians wielding lightsabers, like, for the same reason. It's just, like, the Force kind of just turns a blind eye. Like, somehow this species evolved away from the all-present, ever, you know, binding and penetrating midichlorians.
Yeah, the midichlorians don't talk to them. They no longer have midichlorians in their cells anymore.
Something like that. You know, not to bring up midichlorians. And I'm pretty sure I didn't say it first. So, who said the M word? Let's rewind.
Any thoughts on this?
Yep.
I mean, I'm inclined to agree that I think it might be a genetic thing rather than anything else. So it's something to do with their species. That seems to make the most sense to me. That's why it doesn't work on them. I don't know that it would just be Watto himself. Like that, I don't know. I just don't know how that would work if it was just him. But I think it would actually be more interesting if there's a whole species of out there that just is not influenced by the Force at all, like can't use it and can't be influenced by it. Like I think that would be something really cool to explore.
See, and they did explore that in the EU. There was a whole bunch of different characters and a race of people that are not even inside the Force. Like, you couldn't see them in the Force. So that's, it was really crazy. Interesting. Yeah, but obviously that's EU. You know, the Yuuzhan Vong, you know, don't exist anymore. And,
right.
You know,
but there's precedent, because, like, Jabba, you said Jabba. Like, that's original trilogy. He can't
be. Yeah, but he's not influenced. Like, he recognizes that he can't be influenced because he's not weak-minded. You know, because
that's his explanation for it. But it could actually be, you know, like that's a little bit different from that being the actual reason.
Yeah, and it could be maybe something that, like, you know, again, you know, the Jedi that we see most often, at least interacting on screen, are humans, with the exception of, say, Yoda. Could it be just simply that, you know, they don't know how the mind of a different species works to be able to influence? Not that they're not able to influence.
Right, like when Luke tries to use it, Luke's the newest, most newbiest Jedi of them all, like... you know, when he tries to influence Jabba and it doesn't work. Sure, it works on the Twi'lek or Twi'lek.
It works on Bib Fortuna, so it does work. Yeah. But you know, maybe Bib Fortuna is more of a humanoid type character, and he's similar to humans. You know, who knows? So that's just interesting to think about with Uwato, and the fact that, you know, the mind tricks just don't work on him, but only money. So he says,
only Republic money.
Only money.
Only money. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. I think that's the name of the episode.
I have to take it so much more over the top because he's so fun. Like he is. I really. I think he is probably an offensive character, though. Getting back to that comment from earlier, his sort of relentless pursuit of money and profit, combined with his larger than normal nose, is, you know, one of the reasons why episode one is as negatively received as it is. I feel like I've definitely heard that about that analysis of Watto before. So I think that's sort of important to talk about, because how unique it is to see this type of character and for George to have placed this type of character at the forefront of episode one, essentially. I mean, he is the obstacle. He is the conflict in the story. Darth Maul shows up at the end in his pretty red face paint. But really, most of the story is convincing Watto to give them the hyperdrive they need, and also rescuing Anakin and or his mom from him. So Watto, in that way, apart from Sebulba, is also kind of like one of the villains in episode one.
I'll agree with you that. In all honesty, I never actually thought of Watto as such a major character, at least not plot device wise. But yeah, he really is. You know, he's one of those things where, you know, the whole story of the whole prequel trilogy is all about Anakin's journey. And, you know, the biggest hurdle was getting Anakin away from being this, you know, slave kid to become a Jedi, to become the hero, the balance of the Force, if you will. And Watto is like the biggest thing blocking him. On top of that, you have, you know, the T-14 hyperdrive that no one else on the planet has, that only he has, and he wants money. So, you know, how do we get around that? And it comes down to gambling, which Shmi and, you know, Anakin kind of say, like, everything revolves around it. So, yeah, I'll agree with you completely on that. That's kind of what it is. Now, my question is, though, Republic credits aren't good enough. Only money. Again, with the only money, what is this money they use on Tatooine?
Slaves? Is it more?
Wasn't it marks?
See, and that's the thing, is they don't really talk about it. They just keep saying only money. And, like, why would you refer to it as money versus credits? Like, obviously, in this virtual world, you know, it's credits is what it is. Republic credits and, you know, credits on these things. So money, that's very Earth human kind of thought process for. So I was just something that kind of came to mind when he said only money. Like,
doesn't he also say like something more real, or is that something else?
It's like, you know, he felt that it Republic credits weren't real enough for the economy of the outer
rim. That might honestly be because of like how the Republic is, because the Republic wouldn't base their money, like their economy, on something like slaves, right? Like, they would never do that. And I wonder if it's even based on like gold, you know, how like
a thought process. Well, and that's what's interesting, because like, remember when Padme meets Anakin, she says, "You're a slave." He says, "I'm a person and my name is Anakin." You know, it's like, she's like, the Republic slave laws, you know, should ban that out here. And, you know, obviously it doesn't, you know, they don't, It doesn't reach that region. You know, this is the BFE of the Star Wars world. You know, this is Tatooine, so far out outer rim territory.
Are you an angel?
Oh my god, please stop.
Travelers out here talk about them.
I honestly, like, I'm loving this. I feel like we need to do a group watch of Phantom Menace now.
Indie Pop, everybody.
Resistance Radio commentary.
Oh, I would love that.
Oh boy. But yeah, so like, obviously money is one thing here. And then gambling. Obviously everything revolves around gambling for them and Watto. He loses Anakin, and you talked about it, Eric, a little bit, but he cheats. Now, Qui-Gon Jinn cheats by using the Force to move the dice to make sure that it is Anakin that they're betting about versus, like, Shmi.
Okay, I'm going to be put into this decision. It has to be... Yeah.
Now, do you think Watto has loaded dice and he knew it was supposed to land? Like, do they both know they were cheating each other?
Oh, that's interesting. I like that a lot, actually. Because he chooses, doesn't he choose which color is...
He chooses which color. And here's the thing, like, all right, so as a kid, I recognize. So obviously a dice has how many sides? It's got six sides, right? Well, the blue color, oh geez, I need to pull it back up. I want to say it was blue color is the color that was Shmi, and red was the color that was Anakin. Well, there are four sides that are blue and two sides that are red. Like, I noticed that as a kid, that I'm like, wait a minute, there's something wrong there. And obviously Qui-Gon moves it to move it to the side that is for Anakin. So, like, it's already loaded in the sense of odds for one color.
Right.
But could it also be weighted and stuff like that to make sure it lands? Like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, I always thought that you know, when Watto saw that it landed on the other side, like, his eyes kind of got big. And I felt that, like, he's like, that's impossible. But it did. And he can't really call. He's like, he didn't call, you know, Qui-Gon out as a Jedi early. He's like, what are you, some kind of Jedi waving your hands around like this? But at the same time, like, did he move the dice? We know he did. We see the finger. We see the hand and the movement and the gesture of Liam Neeson and all that. So it's like, we know that Qui-Gon cheated. Did Watto cheat too? What do you guys think about him? Like, because obviously we know he's not the most savory of persons. He owns slaves and, you know, he's this kind of bad, jerky person all the way around. So what do you guys think about him gambling and that dice roll?
Danny and Gina don't have anything to say?
No, I'm looking something up. I'm sorry. I got really distracted about currency. And I'm sorry. To go back for a hot second, Jar Jar, when he's on Tatooine and he bites that meat on a string.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They ask him for whoopoopy.
Wait, say that one more time. Say that one more time.
Oh, okay. I'll do it just for you for the soundbite. Whoopoopy. It's WPUPIU.
Whoopoopy.
And that's the currency that's asked of Jar Jar. And there's also Truguts and Golden Pagots that are mentioned on the planet. And people were saying that the first one I mentioned is probably a lower currency because it's used by
food vendors.
So I'm assuming Golden Pagots are the
gamblers,
the type of gambling currency that would be used.
Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, sorry to just. Go back a second.
No. Well, all right. So we'll go back for a minute. So what's interesting though is like I've always imagined this type of currency be some type of coin or something, or like digital credits type thing, like a credit card. But Watto did something when he talked about only money. He used the finger gesture, which I've always equated with like paper bills. Money. Yeah, paper with bills, money. Yeah. Paper money, like bill notes and stuff like that. So like, and that's what I find really interesting. Obviously, it's a film, and it's not real, and it's made up, but I just found it really interesting that I feel like it was almost taken out of character, out of, you know, space for this type of character. I agree with you, Eric. It's pretty offensive as I start to think about it in hindsight now, being older and seeing it all, but
it's very Shylock from Merchant of Venice sort of thing. Like, he deals in flesh trade. Like, there's no other way to paint this character.
I don't think he just deals in flesh trade, though.
Well, no, he bets on all the sporting events. You know, he bets on pod races, and he wants. I mean, I wonder how he acquired the hyperdrive in the first place. Did he repossess a ship? You know, from someone who had it. You know, or anything like that. Like, you really just kind of wonder where it all stops. But I actually just really like the character anyway because he is so interesting and unique for the universe. You know, and as I said before, like the fact that he is essentially the big conflict, for a majority of the film is very interesting. You know, this notion that his dice were weighted, or I didn't notice that the colors were uneven. That's super funny, but it also allows me to rest easy tonight thinking of Qui-Gon because Qui-Gon had no choice, right? I mean, if the dice were in fact weighted, then Watto wasn't playing fair, and it serves him right.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I take from it. And I believe, like, it's been a long time since I've read the Phantom Menace novelization, but I believe they kind of addressed this a little bit more. So anyone who's read it recently or wants to read it can send in and let us know. But I'm pretty sure they addressed this a little bit more in the novelization where Watto tries to go back on his bet and stuff like that, and just different things along the lines of, you know, he knew Qui-Gon cheated, but I think Qui-Gon also knew that Watto was cheating too.
That's the thing, isn't it? He can't really call him out properly because then he'll have to be like, well, how do you know that I cheated? Well, because,
Right. Well, isn't that what Qui-Gon says? Look, why don't we take it up with the Hutts? I'm sure they'll be interested, you know? And it's like, oh, wait a minute. Okay, so there it is. So, you know, Watto I think Watto was probably cheating.
Yeah, oh, I'll take it back too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are all my notes I had on Watto because, you know, he's a Toydarian. I don't know. Is you guys anything else that I'm missing on this notes? Because obviously Watto is only shows up a little bit. He only shows up in episode 1 and 2 for parts of each film and very short in episode 2. And we don't really see him anywhere else. We don't even see Toydarians pretty much anywhere else except, like I said, we do see Toydarians show up in the Clone Wars series, at least for canonical stuff. We see him in, you know, the Clone Wars series with Yoda in one of the episodes, King Gatuku. So we see them, you know, Yoda talk to them on their planet, and that's kind of it. They were originally neutral in the Clone War, but that's kind of it. Legend-wise, we don't really see them that much more either. You know, other than that, I feel like I've always felt like they're kind of similar to the Hutts as that kind of unsavory type of character. I don't know.
They fit right in on Tatooine. I mean, if you're going in, but that's fair to say, because if you go right back to A New Hope, and Ben Kenobi's talking about the Mos Eisley, and what does he say, like the wretched hive of scum and villainy. That's all of Tatooine is just sort of corrupt and crooked, and the Hutts run it, and it's you get these kinds of unsavory characters that they would never exist closer to the Republic, like Padme says. But actually, that ends up making it more interesting. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention how good of a singer Watto is. Those who've played N64's Episode 1 Racer should know this. Actually, it's not so much singing, to be fair, as humming. But on the main menu of the video game...
When you're picking your speeder, right?
When you're picking your speeder, he's like... It sounds just like that.
Eric, that's my new ringtone. That's my new ringtone for when you call.
Jesus. Mikey, you're killing me. Well,
you know you want it. I'll post it for everyone to download it.
Okay, please do. That should be our first ringtone.
That's right. We already got one out there for Danya,
too. Oh, does it have Lando in it?
No. Oh. But yeah, so yeah.
But anyway, so he does. Yeah. He does play Episode 1 Racer, also because you should, but also linger on the speeder chasing scene, and you get it. Watto hums the cantina, which I never thought was like a chronological error, because obviously we hear them play it in A New Hope, but it's probably a hit that's been around a real long time, is how I justify it. So.
I agree with you that. Or maybe Watto actually is the one who wrote the song. And
I think that's it. I think that's secretly.
And they stole it from him. And that's why he's so disheveled. Like, he's not getting royalties for the song.
They stole my song. Never get any credit.
All right. Anything else, Danya, Gina, anything else about Watto, guys?
No, I think we've covered everything.
I'm a Toydarian!
Lying the tricks don't work on me.
Oh, God. All right. Well,
there'll be a dramatic reading of Watto, of the entire Force Awakens.
As Toydarians.
as Toydarians by Eric and Mikey at Indie Pop. Please stay tuned for the Force times.
Anyway. As always.
Indie Pop. Sorry.
Oh, jeez. Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Gina.
See you guys soon.
In Indie.
I'm a Toydarian. Da 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 da